This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome to the Get In Podcast, presented by 4th and Dude, special edition 2022 season preview episode. We made it, folks. College football is officially back, and we're just a few short days away from Saturday's season opener versus Rutgers. On today's episode, we'll recap key storylines from an eventful offseason, break down both sides of the projected depth chart, and preview what to watch for with the Scarlet Knights coming to town.
Matt, it would be hard for me to be more excited about an upcoming football season. I think, truthfully, since we started at BC in 09, obviously you were a fan earlier than that, but at least in my 13 or so years as a fan of this program, I can't think of a time where we've had so much athleticism in the skill positions. It's just a unique setup for a Boston College football team, and I think with that, we're going to see explosive offense. We're going to put up a lot of points. And the defense gets better every year under half, and we'll get to it obviously later. But I think this is going to be one of the best teams we've had in the last decade plus.
Yeah, it's year three for Hafley. It's sort of put up or shut up time. All the off the field stuff, right? His personality, all that stuff's great. But let's face it, the wins haven't necessarily been there, and there's been a lot of good reasons for that. But this is kind of the year where not everything's come together, but we have too much talent on both sides of the ball to not win at least 7-plus, 8-plus games, ideally, this year. So, it's time to find out. We joke, when Hafley signed that big extension, we don't know if he's a good football coach yet, but he's our football coach. We know that. So fingers crossed. Obviously, a lot of concerns about the O-line that we'll talk about. But when you talk about Phil, you talk about Zay, you talk about the studs on defense – there's just too much going for this football team to have another disappointing season. So I think we're all looking forward to what year three has in store.
Completely agree. I'll get in front of it too, just for the sake of this episode and kind of behind the scenes inside baseball. I've done approximately zero research in the offseason. I'm not going to know really what I'm talking about game by game. I'm not really going to know what I'm talking about today. Took on a new job a couple weeks ago, so I've been a little busy with the onboarding side of things. So, every year we get older. Now we're 31. I don't know if that's a secret, but we're 31. We're kind of old now. The responsibilities keep piling up. There's just less and less time to be on the message boards. I know you had a good Googe thread yesterday, so you've got some BC bandwidth available, which is good for our listeners. But I'll get in front of this
Fridays
and say that you're going to be the one kind of driving the bus on the episode here.
Listen, everyone knows summer, especially August. No one works in August.
Correct.
And I know that you work in finance after taking a 2-year vacation.
I recommend MBAs to everybody, by the way. If you can get it, it's a lot of fun.
We appreciate you joining the workforce and now being a productive member of society. Certainly recognizing that you're very busy. I'm busy. But I'm also very much, I'm just so jacked up for this football season. Sometimes a Friday afternoon rolls around, you want to do a deep dive on, some Googe analytics.
Who doesn't?
That's what I'm going to do.
Who doesn't?
I got a lot of flack in the 4th and Dude group chat about that. Someone, one of our other friends that's behind the scenes, he had a funny text that said, that meme where it says no one, and then all of a sudden the other person just says a bunch of things. I know it's kind of hard to explain that particular
meme. No, it makes sense. I can picture it. Well, I was in the group chat, so that makes it easier.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's kick this off. We have a couple segments here. And yeah, this is going to be kind of an agenda-free episode. It's Saturday morning. We're about a week till kickoff, almost exactly, a full week before Rutgers comes to town. Matt, what are your half fulls? Let's get into the positives first.
Well, I think I touched on it in the start, but I just think the athleticism broadly. I think that we've had success in the past decade, obviously, and you know, I don't want to say put a ceiling on that success, but six, 7 wins has been the ceiling. And when, you know, those teams have been good, there still hasn't been this explosive offense. You know, obviously there's plays that come to mind. You think of the USC game, for example. That was like the most of Tyler Murphy in general was the most explosive offense we've seen in a long time. I think having that now on a weekly basis with the Zay Flowers show, with Garwell being the running back that he is and a quarterback that, you know, by all accounts, and if he has the year that I think many of us think he can be a first round draft pick. Like, this is just unique in terms of Boston College football. It's not going to be this stud offensive line, which we'll talk about because there are some very valid and legitimate, terrifying concerns there. But this is not going to be that traditional Boston College of we're just going to beat you in the trenches and we're going to run all over you with an A.J. Dillon. This is going to be we're going to spread the field. We're going to put up a lot of points. And by the way, we're going to win games with our defense as well, which, you know, we haven't really seen it, you know, since Don Brown was here. So overall, just really excited about. I think when we win games, which is going to be a lot, but they're going to be fun wins. Like, they're going to be fun wins to watch. They're not going to be these grinded out, you know, pound the rock type wins that we were used to under the Daz years and even some of the early two Halfley years. So just excited to watch a high powered, high octane offense this year.
Yeah, really not a historical characteristic to have these electric skill players and have concerns in the trenches. It's going to be a unique season from that standpoint, but that's what Halfley wants, right? And you know, Halfley's certainly a solid recruiter, has focused primarily on the defense, but, you know, he's also been able to leverage, you know, that the transfer portal, get guys like Phil. Zay was actually an Adazio guy. We have guys like Jalen Gill he was able to bring in. There's just so much talent, specifically on the offensive skill position, that, you know, we're going to have a lot of explosives this year on that side of the ball. On that point, one of my biggest half-holes from the offseason is the change in coordinators and really the I'll group the O-line coach in as well. Dating back to the very first game under Halfley, it was versus Duke back in 2020, right? We've been pretty vocal in our disappointment with offensive coordinator Frank Cignetti and O-line coach Matt Applebaum. The offensive output just hasn't matched the talent that we had, you know, even when healthy, even if you throw out, you know, last year, right? Just way too predictable on third and fourth downs in the red zone. Applebaum blew up what was previously a top 20 offensive line. Switched guys around, you know, needlessly forced this zone blocking scheme that never worked, never really came close to working. We'll see what they do with that this year. That's going to be interesting to watch how they tweak that. So, you know, after 2 years of ineptitude in which we were ranked 10th in the ACC in 2020 and then dead last in 2021 in yards per game, Half finally said, you know what, I've seen enough. And he sent those guys packing. Credit to Halfley for doing that, right? I mean, that's really tough to kind of admit that you were wrong. And those were his guys. And while Halfley's a defensive guy, he really let those offensive guys run the offense. And he admitted to it. He said he didn't have as much involvement as he would have liked. So those were two crucial hires. He missed on them, and he was able to not only kind of let go of them, you know, in a timely manner, but they somehow got promotions out of it, or at least Applebaum, who's now the O-line coach with the Miami Dolphins, and Cignetti, for whatever reason, Pitt decided, oh, yeah, we want that guy running our offense. So, you know, certainly an interesting offseason from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, I want to take 10 seconds on just the insanity of college football hiring, by the way. Like, even, you know, with Coach Googe, this guy's been fired, you know, 15 times in the last 10 years, and he continued to get, you know, an ACC high-level job. Who on earth, the Miami Dolphins, hiring Matt Applebaum after what they saw the last 2 years? Like, what is going on with NFL front offices, college head coaches making these hiring decisions? It's just like the old boys club. And once you're in, you have a job for life. And it's like they've all agreed on some handshake deal that we're never going to like actually kick you out of the profession. I don't know what needs to happen, but Cignetti should not have a job. He should be in a retirement home. Applebaum should just not be anywhere near football ever again. But anyways, they're not our problem anymore. I think it was, I want to say Blogston, our fellow 2013 good friend, he had a tweet, I think last week about, you know, one of Halfley's biggest flaws and, you know, again, as has been said on Twitter many times over the offseason, the guy is just 6-6 in both of his 2 years. So there are some valid criticisms there, but Blogston pointed out one of the biggest ones is his loyalty and, you know, how you could have made a switch from both Cignetti and Applebaum after year one. You certainly could have made it midseason last year, but, you know, he continued to kind of ride or die with his guys. So seeing that transition and having Half actually, you know, have enough to pull the plug and say, all right, look, enough's enough. I know that we go way back. We have this relationship, but let's move on, is huge for his development as a head coach. And when you hire a first-time head coach, a young guy, you're going to have to deal with some of those growing pains. It's a shame that it took 2 years to get here, but you know, it is part of his longer-term trajectory. So absolutely thrilled to see that and excited about McNulty. McNulty, I think, got off to a rough start. He had some bad tweets. I forget exactly what about. It was something about making light of yeah, it was like making light of NIL because of a mental health suicide, which is terrible, but terrible start for him on Twitter. But I think since then, people have been kind of positive about what he's going to bring to this offense. He brought in I assume he had a key hand in bringing in the transfer tight end from Notre Dame as well. So, and just broadly, if we can get, especially on a year when we have Notre Dame on the calendar, getting like a lot of Notre Dame guys in on top of Jerko, I think is huge for like the locker room potential before that matchup. Like everyone's going to be rallying around of like, F these guys, you know, we got a lot to prove to them. So overall, very excited. Googe, I don't know what's going on with him. You know, you had a good thread on it yesterday, as we alluded to. He's been fired 100 times in like 5 years. He rubs people the wrong way by all accounts. He was tweeting nonstop until what, like early May, and then that just actually shut off. So I wonder what happened behind the scenes there of like, hey, you haven't signed a single recruit yet. Stop tweeting about big dogs all the time. But and that was right around the Mahogany injury as well. So we'll see. Overall, I'm more positive on McNulty than Googe, but generally, broadly, happy that Halfley had enough to pull the plug.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right. My thread, you know, I did all this work yesterday putting together the analytics, and then I didn't really, it's one of those where it's like, all right, what did that tell us? I wasn't really sure.
There was no conclusion to your analysis there. That's it. Yeah.
So we looked at 5 years of, you know, the last five seasons that Googe was O-line coach for five different teams, which is just hysterical. And, you know, it seems like it's pretty hit or miss. Like the year he was with the Colts, he was awesome. The line was incredible. They had this massive turnaround. They went from dead last in the NFL and sacks allowed to first, and then Reich still fired him. And there's more to the story there. It sounds like Reich just wanted to bring in his own guy. And then you look at his other stops, and you know, the Dolphins, you know, I think they were tanking that year. So you really can't, you know, draw conclusions from a lot of these things. But you know, if I were to take away one thing, it seems like he's very good at improving and pass protection. It seems like run blocking, which is one of our big issues last year, obviously, it's a little less conclusive. But yeah, it's just such a bizarre situation where the guy has had legitimately 15 jobs in 15 years. It's insane. But I think either way, I'm the kind of guy where, you know, we've gotten a large enough sample size of Cignetti and Applebaum to know that it just wasn't working, right? And I'm the kind of guy that would always prefer to take a flyer on an unknown than the continued suckitude of whatever that was. You know, I think one reason why Cignetti stayed on so long is because he was instrumental in bringing Phil in. So Halfley's probably thinking, you know, don't want to rock the boat from that standpoint. One thing I really want to see this year is Halfley's fingerprints on the offensive side of the football. He's got to act like a head coach. Like, he's done a great job with the defense. He's done a really, really good job turning around this defense from, you know, obviously we're absolutely terrible in 2019. He's done a great job on that side of the ball, but he's admitted, he said, I've kind of neglected the offense. It's time I take, you know, sort of a closer look at the offense and get more involved directly in that. So, and this might be a dumb comment here, but it's football, right? Like he's this defensive mastermind. Can't you kind of reverse engineer it and be able to tell what's working or not working on the offensive side of the football? I get that if it's Cignetti and he's got 20 years on you, he's one of your mentors from back in the day, you know, you really can't tell him how to run his offense, but now bringing in this guy, McNulty, you know, hopefully we get that half brain, you know, effect on it a little bit, whatever that looks like. So, you know, I think the takeaway is change is good, especially when it wasn't working last year. This is Phil's last year. It's Zay's last year. So, you know, McNulty's, you know, history is, it's interesting. I mean, he hasn't been an OC. He was the OC at Rutgers, I think in 2018, and then midway through 19, Chris Ash got fired. He was actually the OC when we played them. We played at Rutgers in 19 and actually put up a fair amount of yards. So it's just, it's tough to tell with him because he hasn't really coached with anyone that isn't Rutgers. So anything could happen with McNulty, anything could happen with Googe. But the big thing is they're not the guys that were there previously. So I'm
agreed.
Excited.
It's better than a known. The unknown is better than a known bad entity. So we'll take it. I have one more just quick positive thing. It's not super football related, but I just want to give it 30 seconds because we haven't recorded since what, last like October or November. Keep this.
Yeah, we shut it down after the NC State.
What a disaster.
After going
that
to the
was.
NC State game and having that just terrible second half in the rain, we said, all right, podcast is canceled.
Enough. We got to do enough. So just 30 seconds on this. I just want to say how much I love Earl Grant. Again, this is a football show. We're not going to get into basketball right now, but Earl Grant, I think the hire is fantastic and it looks better every day. Not only is he a great basketball coach, and I do feel very confident that this team's going to make the tournament this coming year. He is apparently a great golfer as well. I don't know if you saw that on Twitter, Matt. There was a BC basketball alumni golf tournament down in your neck of the woods last week. Earl's group won the whole tournament, which is very exciting. So you love to see that. I actually, Matt, I played golf for the first time in a year at a company outing last week, and I tore my shoulder out on the second drive, which is kind of a disaster. It's my first day with the firm, so not great there. But anyways, I love what Earl's doing with the program. I think the run they had in Brooklyn in March was one of the most exciting, exciting week of BC basketball we've had in a really long time. The young guys, Jay-Z, is like going to be an absolute star. The rest of this freshman class that they're bringing in is going to be awesome. So overall, the ceiling is super bright. And Matt, one other thing about that week in Brooklyn, those of you who were there for the opener, there were like 15 people in the crowd. I was selected to represent BC in the halftime show. I won. I think that was against Pitt, right? Was the opener. So credit to me and anyone else who was there. I was the guy in the gold Kim Sanders jersey, which plays all the time, by the way. But someone had to bring home the gold for BC that day.
Yeah, I think they're probably a year or two away from the tourney. They have these great, highly rated freshmen, that it sounds like are going to play right away. And whether they're ACC ready is TBD, but there's such a great nucleus of Jay-Z is like my favorite player in a long time. He's so underrated. I don't know why anyone on this basketball team shoots threes other than him. He's like 46% and everyone else is like 25%.
Well, that's also that average is brought down by one particular shooter.
Come on, don't do that.
I'm not going to. I do want to just say quickly that also in Brooklyn, I thought for sure his family was going to like beat me up. I don't know how they. I don't think we were really that harsh on him, but broadly, BC Twitter was harsh on him. And his wife, girlfriend, I don't know, was sitting two rows in front of me, kept looking back and like staring in my direction for the whole first half. And I think I like tweeted out where we were sitting. So maybe she was like kind of trying to track that and realizing it was me. I was like absolutely terrified. It turns out she was just looking for a friend who was like 15 rows behind me. But I didn't find that out until the second half started. I was very uncomfortable. I was going to literally move seats. But anyways, glad he's gone. I think that that's good for the locker room, just good for the team in general. Although I do predict him putting up like 50 when we play Clemson this year.
Oh, no doubt. It's going to be amazing.
He's
going to
go 15 for 15 for three. It's going to be pretty painful. I have a bad feeling.
But between Jay-Z, Post, hopefully DeMar takes a leap this year, and then anything can happen with these freshmen. These look like ACC, closer to ACC ready freshmen than we've had historically that need some time to develop. So, yeah, I'm excited. After the Jim Christian era, I'm excited for BC basketball again. We ended last season on a great note. Would have been awesome to get that Miami win, but what are you going to do? All right, going back to football, I want to talk about Zay. Obviously, Zay is just an absolute highlight reel anytime he touches the ball. Didn't get nearly enough touches last year. And frankly, I wouldn't have blamed him if he tested the portal and looked at a blue blood. I think he could go anywhere in the country. Any team would love to have that deep threat or that reliability over the middle. Just the ability for him to get separation, and then once he has the ball, he's untouchable. The fact that not only did he stick around, but he had hundreds of thousands of dollars, waved at him, which is, by the way, illegal, and it's an illegal inducement to say, hey, if you come play for us, you're going to get $600K. Total BS. I'm in the fraud world. I would have prosecuted the shit out of that. But anyway, that's a separate story. Fortunately, it didn't have to happen. Zay said, BC education is more important than, a short-term cash grab. I want to stay here with my brothers, and I want to compete for an ACC championship. Just such a great storyline. He's such a great, kind of the ultimate BC guy. You saw Jordan Addison, pretty much go to the highest bidder, left Pitt in a really tough spot. And the fact that Zay said, I'm staying here. This is my school. This is my team. Such a great thing. And completely changes our season without Zay. I mean, our outlook with Zay versus without Zay is, 4 or 5 games different, I'd say. Like, he's the guy.
Yeah, no, 100%. That was huge. And it does speak, I guess, you know, in a lot of ways to like the culture of the locker room right now and really how this team kind of cares about each other, cares about playing with each other, which I do think often pays off in the field. Just quickly, I will go a half empty here. I'm not thrilled with the half quotes on. I agree with their quotes of we need to get him the ball as often as possible, as many touches. I don't love him returning punts. As electric as it will be, it's just like what the upside, you know, again, over the course of a season, you think he probably takes one back to the house. That upside versus the obvious downside of one guy running through a fair catch or, you know, any other exposure to injuries there, just to me is, again, to the point that this guy is worth four wins, is terrible. So that's a downside for me, which does, Matt, lead nicely into one of your half empties, which is in the medical tent field, if you want to touch on that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I want – if Zayce wants to return punts, I want him returning punts. As someone that used to return punts, by the way, way back in the day.
Yeah, you did.
It's really not that dangerous, guys. Like, you're going to fair catch it most of the time. You're only going to catch it when you have space. And you're not going to pull the Jamie Silva bullshit from, if you guys remember, the 07 days when he would try to, like, pick up a ground ball in traffic. Like, Zay is not going to do that. He's only going to catch it when he has room to run. And listen, we're going to be in a lot of close games this year. Field position matters. And Zay is probably good to rip a couple, you know, three or four touchdowns easily, right? I mean, I was watching some of the highlights from last year, just like some of his runs against Florida State, that Wake one that got called back. Like I've never seen an athlete like this. So however we can get him the football, I'm all in on that. I say no on kickoff returns because I think that's a little more injury prone, but I think punts, yeah, let's go for it. Injuries though, you brought up injuries. I think it's a good point. Obviously the Christian Mahogany news, I don't know if it was confirmed or not. But shout out to our buddy Marty, who's pretty accurate with breaking news.
He's, like, he's shockingly plugged in. I think that, give him a lot of credit. He's got sources. I think it helps when you're, I assume he's a lot younger than us. So he probably is like closer to people who are still there working in the department, but he is shockingly plugged in. Tell you what, the old people and like the old message board people do not like when he has sources. Now, to be fair, you know, they also will collectively, those guys will. They didn't start the whole fight at practice. They just kind of ran with it. They definitely didn't start it. But I think that because they're plugged in, it's almost like a Streisand effect of now when they tweet something, people just assume it's related to inside knowledge. The fight thing on Twitter was actually a hilarious 24 hours in the BC Twitter sphere. Really enjoyed that.
You got to take it with a grain of salt. Agreed. Anytime Marty's tweeting about something. But in this particular case, he was right on it, right? I mean, it sounds like – and listen – I'm a basketball guy. I get it. I like to hoop. If I'm a 350-pound O-lineman that is projected to go in the first round, maybe I'm not going hard in the paint as much, right? Maybe I'm not, you know, putting myself in that position.
Well, you're a three-point shooter anyways.
I am. It's different. And I'm not banging it down low, so I totally get it. You know, if he's going up for a layup and someone, you know, puts their leg out or he steps on a foot funny, I get it. I get it. Really a position that we couldn't afford to lose, kind of the key veteran there. So obviously that is what it is. We also just heard Joey Lucchetti is medically retiring from football. I think that's a massive loss. He's one of those guys, and again, I was watching some film last week. He is just very, very good in the run game. Like he picks up blocks effortlessly. He's a massive guy. And, you know, I think this season – and let's assume that the O-line is going to struggle. I think in all likelihood that has to be kind of our baseline assumption. The tight ends can really help out a lot with that. We saw, you know, Jake Burt and Corey Abidrizi back in the day picking up, you know, DNs coming around the corner. And it makes a difference. And here's the other thing too. Travis Levy, heck of a blocker. We lost him. I'm concerned not only about the line, but about some of the guys we're losing that were, you know, helpful for picking up blocks. So I think Lucchetti, I think that's going to be a bigger deal than people might realize. Obviously, we have the new tight end in from Notre Dame who's similarly sized. I don't know what his deal is. I think he's more of a pass catcher. So, you know, it's going to be on, you know, a guy like Spencer Witter or, you know, one of the younger guys to step up and fill that role. So, you know, injuries happen for every football team. But those were two that aren't great for BC this year.
Yeah, the Mahogany one was terrible because, again, when you look around to, you know, the rest of the roster, you say, all right, we got a, you know, stud quarterback. We have a stud receiver. We have a great running back. I know one guy doesn't make up the line, but, like, having arguably, if not clearly, the best offensive lineman in the ACC, makes a big difference. Now, the other side is, you know, you could talk about he's only one guy and you know, one guy is not going to make all five, you know, work. So there were going to be issues regardless. But yes, that's pretty massive. Matt, we got about 10 minutes left. I want to, before we just talk records and our expectations, our very high expectations for the season broadly, one other quick half empty, if that's all right. We got to talk about Blake James. What a terrible hire it was. And I don't want to pile on the guy because it is approaching internet bullying. Like
what a terrible hire.
I mean,
the guy was
basically put into a retirement home by Miami. And now he shows up here. He is completely, he doesn't have any presence whatsoever. The college football playoff shirt was a hilarious kind of introduction to him joining BC Twitter. Ever since Baum left, more broadly, the athletics department has been silent and total lack of fan engagement, which we kind of saw last week as well. But this guy is just pathetic. He looks like he's 100 years old. He should not be still in athletics. I think you and I could have done a better job as athletic directors. We would have probably taken less combined salary than him as well. Although we could have maybe bargained up a little bit more, but this is just a classic Leahy hire of picking some other old guy who doesn't belong in the office. And it is ultimately, in right now, one of the most pivotal times in the history of college athletics. We kind of need someone who's going to be sharp. This guy is, I think, quite literally asleep at the wheel. I assume he comes in and just like eats breakfast and then takes a nap for 6 hours and goes home and wears his college football playoff shirt the whole time.
Wow. I'll say this. I mean, he better be able to fundraise, because to date, he hasn't done anything worth his salary, which I'm guessing is what, $800K?
Probably all in, I would guess, yeah.
For an AD is, but yeah, just a head scratcher from the beginning. There's a reason he was out at Miami, and the WEI interview, the thing with that, and it got overblown a little bit. He didn't say anything necessarily that was incorrect. It's just when you look at what he's saying, and the full quote is something along the lines of, "Well, we're going to wait for federal regulation on NIL. Right. BC is not going to be involved. We don't believe that's the right course." And I'm paraphrasing here, but the question was really like, "How do you think NIL is going to shape the future of college football?" And his answer was kind of like that. Whereas if you look at any other Power Five school, you know, their AD is marketing the crap out of their program. They're going to take that opportunity and say, "Hey, listen, We're gonna pay our student athletes. We're gonna make sure we're competitive, and we're gonna do everything we can to make sure that this school is a destination for top student athletes." And he just completely, like, no one cares about your personal opinions about NIL. I agree, it needs to be more federally regulated. You're not gonna do anything about that though. Like, your role as it stands right now is to promote BC. That's all you have to do. That's the only thing you have to do.
It's very reminiscent. That was very reminiscent to the Brad Bates, when he was the one school to vote against basically the NIL before it became the NIL, right? Remember that?
Right.
Whatever, during his other silent tenure. So I'm getting a lot of early Brad Bates from this. Yeah, exactly. The one school, because again, it's his personal opinion, wants to vote against it. How does that make us look? If I'm another ACC program, I'm playing that clip to every single recruit that I'm walking into, not an ACC program, any other program in the country that's recruiting against BC. I'm playing that clip and saying, look, like, you could come to, you know, Miami or any other, not even a, you know, blue blood, any other, you know, just a good school that's going to try to a Pitt, for example, like, all right, we're in a major city, we're going to try to get you some exposure, versus this, like, you're on your own. So night and day, it's just terrible.
Between that quote and then, did you see his tweet where he pretty much showed a guy on crutches? And I think it was one of the D linemen. He outed a guy as, you know, pretty much out for the year. Halfley must like hate this guy.
Yes.
Halfley's trying to do all these great things.
The reason he came to BC is, or such a big reason he came to BC is because he had this great relationship with Jarmon. They took the private jet together. They had this, you know, this bromance. He's gone. He's like, all right, Pat Kraft, at least a football guy. Like, we can find some middle ground. And now he's got Blake James, who, like, legitimately, I mean, Halfley's a young guy. Blake James is, like, old enough to be his, like, great-grandfather, I think. And, you know, knows nothing about anything of modern game. Like, he would be probably good friends with a Don Shula type, for example. Is Don Shula still alive?
I think so.
Did he just die? Not, like, breaking news, just die, like... Like, I think in the last 12 months. Anyways, Blake James seems like a Don Shula type, not a Jeff Halfley type. So I think this is, if Halfley does leave at some point in the next year or two, I think the fact that Blake James is the guy at the helm here is a big, big reason for that. So I just had to get that off my chest.
Don Shula's dead.
Okay.
So rest in peace.
Rest in peace to Don Shula. But that's sad for Blake James, because they probably were good friends.
And here's the other thing, too. and then we can move on. Any other year or any other era of college football, it'd be kind of like, okay, haha, funny.
Doesn't matter. He's going to retire in a year anyways because he's 90.
Right. This is such a pivotal time with conference realignment, with the ACC grant of rights, with everything that's going on right now. And this is probably – we don't have enough time to get into, you know, what the future of the ACC is going to look like. My personal opinion is I don't – it's not like we're safe till 2036 or whenever the grant of rights expires.
Correct.
These ADs and you know, conference commissioners, like they are egotistical. They like to kind of alpha each other, right? There's going to be moves that are made in the within the next 3 or 4 years that are going to shake up the ACC and college football as a whole. BC currently does not have – we don't deserve a seat at the table, frankly. And it would have been great to have a guy like MJ, maybe Kraft. I don't know what he did. But just a guy that gets it at the helm. So we at least have a prayer. I know people joke like, oh, yeah, BC's going to wind up in the Patriot League. With this guy, it wouldn't shock me.
Correct.
Like, it wouldn't shock me for – we just get left behind. And, yeah, I can't believe we hired this guy. You know what? I don't know what – like, I get Leahy, and I get that he is the authority on all this. What is the Board of Trustees doing? Like, does no one on the Board of Trustees give a shit about football?
No. No, the answer is absolutely not.
Or the institution's future as a whole that, by the way, is very much dependent on, you know, on athletics. It's just insane.
The irony of a school benefiting from the Flutie, like being named for the Flutie effect, the irony of them just totally missing out on the importance of athletics infuriates me every single day. I would say that's one of the biggest stresses in my life is just how incompetent the BOT and specifically Leahy are when it comes to anything sports related. So very frustrating, Matt. I think, you know, we should just like collectively in 5, 10 years, get like 40 people, young people who care about sports to like give all of our assets to one guy so that he's rich enough to become on the BOT and actually like make a push here, because these 90-year-old guys that they keep electing to it just as kind of like a, you know, thing to put on their resume at the country club is getting pretty frustrating when these people just don't care at all about sports, which is the only thing I care about with Boston College at this point. Like, I'm a math guy. I love the new, they did something with math or whatever. They developed something. That's all good. I care about a winning football team, a winning basketball team to a lesser extent, a winning hockey team. And I guess baseball would be if they won, great. But I don't really care about those two. I just care about basketball and football. Give me a winning program.
By the way, it's not like our academics are
correct.
Getting better.
We've slid in the rankings every year. Why do you think?
Just everything's going. Yeah. So all right. Let's move on, because I know we could spend a lot of time on this. I want to do a couple more things. I know we're running short.
I've got like 5 minutes left. I've got 5 minutes left.
Where do you have to go, Matt?
Well, I'm going furniture shopping today, Matt. I'm 31. I told you there's a lot of things. I got 5 minutes left.
There's no clock on that. There's no clock on that. I want to talk depth chart real quick, because I promised that. Let's do 2 minutes on the depth chart. We have to talk Rutgers, so I might need like 7 more minutes here. I'll go quick on the depth chart.
2 minutes on the depth chart. I'm literally timing you. I'm going to cut you off in exactly 2 minutes.
All right. Shoot. Let's see here. So Phil is obviously our quarterback.
Don't waste time on that. You know, that's the obvious one.
All right. So the two main units that our season depends on is the O-line. We already talked about the O-line, 5 brand new starters, most of which were very heralded recruits. You talk about Kendall. You talk about Trapillo. You talk about a couple of the other guys that have some snaps, but very minimal starts. Anything could happen, right? The good news is it's not like we were all that great last year. So it's not like there's going to be this huge, you know, drop off from O-line U because of, you know, how bad they botched it last year. Not dumping on the players, by the way. Most of those guys are in the NFL, still in camps as we speak. But just if you look at the advanced stats, BC's O-line as a unit was just terrible. So there won't be a drop off. But, you know, if we have an average O-line, we have a chance at a special season. If it's like Florida State bad, then probably not. And Phil, you know, might be injury prone and all that stuff. Run game won't work, et cetera. You guys know that. There's no sense in even talking about it more. We'll see what happens with Rutgers. We'll know pretty quickly what we got there.
All right. 1 minute in. Good job. You're on pace.
All right. I think that's kind of the story of the offense. Otherwise, it's kind of business as usual. We didn't really lose any key players from last year. So it's all good. Defensively, the strength's going to be in the secondary. Obviously that's where Hap put his stamp. DeBerry, I think, is going to be an all-ACC guy. There's some concerns about the front 7.
A lot of concerns.
I think they have to be better. There's a lot of guys that got some time as freshmen. I'm a big, big, big Marcus Valdez guy, as we all know, the certified public sack accountant. He's in year 7 or 8. Like, it's insane.
It's like Carl Krauser of BC football.
He has so many degrees at this point. So I think he's going to be great. We have Boozy back. That's massive. I'm a big, big, big Ty Clemmons guy. As you guys know, I'm a spring game enthusiast. He had 5 sacks in the spring game, something crazy like that. I really like him to emerge. Realistically, he's going to be one of those guys that has a great spring game and then we never hear from again. That seems to happen all the time. The only key guy we really lost is IGM, who I think was good. He was a good, you know, middle linebacker and flew around the field. But we got a lot of great guys. When you talk about Cam Arnold, you talk about Blackwell, you talk about Steele, guys that are quick. Like, these are athletes, and it's the scheme that Halfley wants to run. He finally has his type of guy in there. So, again, it's kind of the same thing. If the D-line is even average, I really like the kind of certainly the secondary, and I think that these linebackers could be special as well. So if you look at the stats, like I said, Halfley improved the defense from pretty much dead last in every category in 19 to average in 2020. And then we were like a top 30 defense. We were excellent against one of the top teams against the pass. We have to improve on the rush, but one of the top teams in the ACC against the pass. If that continues, then you know, we could have some low-scoring ball games. The offense doesn't have to be spectacular. I just look for the defense to be a major strength and one of the top units in the conference, certainly, and ideally in the country.
I agree. Nothing to add. I think that was really well done there, Matt. Appreciate you doing some research on this pod, because I couldn't have told you a lot of that stuff. Let me just put it that way. But I came in at 3.5 minutes, so well done. You want to take 2 minutes on Rutgers, and then we're going to go Mike and the Mad Dog style, game by game, through the season prediction here.
Sure. So Rutgers, and I meant to look up the line. I think it's still floating around 7, right?
Yep.
So, you know, we're home favorites, 7-point favorites to Rutgers. I'm a little more concerned about this game than I think most folks are. I think Rutgers, so they were 5-8 last season, right? Shiano's done a decent job improving recruiting. They haven't really seen the benefits of that yet. It's still going to take another year or two where they're really back. They went 5-8. If you recall, Matt, they went to the Gator Bowl because Texas A&M, I believe, had COVID issues. So they, despite going 5-7, they got the call up to play Wake and got smoked by Wake, which we did too, by the way.
We did.
So coming off that season, like, you got to remember, like, Rutgers plays in a very tough division. They're on the very good side of the Big Ten, where they have to play Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, obviously. So 5-7, 5-8, like, that's not that bad of a record. They had a couple good wins. They beat Illinois last year. Like, they're not the Rutgers of 2018, 2019, right?
Sure.
Like, they're an okay football team. They have this new quarterback, Gavin Wimsett, who was a top 3 dual threat in the country from a couple recruiting classes ago. He's a redshirt freshman. He's competing for the job with the incumbent, who's like another 7th-year guy, Noah Vedral, who we saw in 2019. They still haven't named a quarterback, which is interesting. I'm hoping it's Vedral, just kind of the devil you know, and he's got a definite ceiling, as opposed to throwing in this kind of an unknown who had some spot duty last year, but otherwise could be the next big thing. And you know, it's just harder for us to game plan against that. And half's watching film, obviously. There's nothing to go off of, really. So I think that's one thing to watch out for. They did lose a couple guys to the NFL, Bo Melton and Isaiah Pacheco. So 2 key skill guys that they don't really have replacements for. Their defense was okay. They do have a new D coordinator. But they had held, I think, Michigan to like 20 points, something like that. So it's kind of hit or miss. It's kind of like Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know who's going to show up. Like, they'll give up 42 points to Maryland, but they'll hold Michigan to 20. So it's kind of one of those things where you don't know which Rutgers you're going to get necessarily. But overall, I don't think we should take this game too lightly. Anything can happen in an opener.
It is an opener. Anything can happen in an opener. Shout out our guy, Sylvia. Look, I think broadly you covered everything there. I'm just going to go right to my score prediction. I think they do nothing on offense, and I think our offense, you know, is strong enough to put up some points. I agree with you in general. I think Shiano is going to do a good job. It's obviously a great hire, and they're not going to be the doormat. You know, they're not going to be UConn, for example. But I still think this is a pretty comfortable win. I'm going to go right into the score prediction. BC 31, Rutgers 10.
Okay. So comfortable. It's a comfortable win.
Comfortable.
I got 24-9. Okay. I still have concerns about our O-line. So, you know, I think I don't know that I see us getting into the 30s. But I do think that, you know, Rutgers has enough issues offensively where, and I'm really high on our defense this year. So, I like us to hold them to, you know, less than a couple touchdowns. But yeah, obviously this is a massive game and need to get the season off to the right foot. If we lose to Rutgers, you kind of start to, and I assume that if we do lose to Rutgers, it's going to be because we don't have an O-line. So like we keep saying, Rutgers will tell us a lot about what the rest of the season looks like.
Agreed. With that, Matt, let's do, again, Mike and the Mad Dog style, 90 seconds each. We're going to just click.
I don't know what that means. I don't watch Mike or the Mad Dog.
You're not from the Northeast, or you're not from the tri-state area, I guess it would be.
That's correct. I'm proud of it.
You're not. Okay. So basically, it's as simple as it sounds, Matt. You just go game by game. You say, you know, Rutgers win, Vatek. I'm not going to spoil all my guesses yet. You go through that. You say no more than 5 seconds on a particular game. At the end, you've arrived at your total season prediction. Basically a way to get to our final number.
Can I have one note about the schedule, just kind of overarching?
Yes.
Obviously, our if you look at the schedule, right, the bye is right in the middle of the schedule. So it's kind of like two 6-game seasons, if you will. The first 6 games, while not impossible, it's kind of tough. We have a tough schedule this year. We kind of had a weaker one last year, and obviously it depends on how good the ACC is. But we currently have 4 teams that are ranked. You talk about Clemson, NC State, Wake Forest, and Notre Dame. Some of those, I think, are fraudulent rankings, especially Hartman's out for Wake Forest. But, you know, the good news is we have some time for the O-line to gel before we get to NC State, Notre Dame. But the first 6 games is a tough stretch. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Well, spoiler alert, I guess. I'm going to kind of disagree with you. So let's just get right into it. Rutgers, as we talked about, win. Vatek, yep. Week 2, always a little scary going down a night game in Enter Sandman, but I do think that they're consistently overrated. Win, 2-0, Maine, night game, which is so weird for an FCS, that's win, 3-0. Florida State is, again, it's a like a Vatek in that sense of, like, it's just a tough place to play in general. 3-0 gets, like, the fan, I mean, 3-0, if we're 3-0, gets their fan base into it a little bit more. I assume they'll probably be a decent record at that point. But still, they've had our number historically. We're overdue for a win. That's a win. That's 4-0. Louisville at home, I think being at home for that is big. I'm terrified of their mobile quarterback. That's kind of tore us up the last couple of years. That one is, I'm going to still call it a win, but I don't really love it. I'm just going to say that. But that gets us 5-0 into Clemson. Clemson is College Game Day again, because they're going to be top 5 as they, you know, currently are ranked at 4. College Game Day on the Heights, 5-0 going into it. I'm going to unfortunately say loss for that one. And I hate to say it, but I think that otherwise we're going to end up at 12-0 at the end of this exercise. And that just feels a little too high. But anyways, 5-1. Wake Forest, again, to your point, that's a fraudulent 22. No Sam Hartman. That's a win. That's 6-1. UConn, give me a break. We might try to go to the UConn game because I've got – people forget I'm like from 10 minutes away from Rensselaer Field. So might try to go to that. But that's what? That's a win. That's 7-1, right? 7-1. Have we had the bye yet? Yeah, we had the bye before Wake Forest. Duke at home, easy win. 8-1. NC State on the road, that one scares me a little bit. I'm going to say loss for that one, 8-2. I know. Notre Dame, we're going to Notre Dame. Big group going out, Chicago, party bus to and back. That's a win. The Jerko, what a way to end his, you know, total college career. That's a win. It's the biggest win we've had in a decade plus for sure, I would say. That puts us at, what are we, 10-1? 9-2 right now? 9-2. End the year, Syracuse at home, Thanksgiving weekend, another win. 10-2, Matt. I feel really, really good about this team's ability to get 10-2. That's a good bowl game. We're going to play a bowl game this year, it feels like. We're overdue for playing a bowl game. So we're going to win whatever bowl game we're in. I'm going 11-2, final prediction.
I like it. I actually have the same. So 10-2, 11-2 with the bowl game. The losses that I have... I'm still scared of Louisville. The way we played them last year, the way Cunningham just tore us up, 133 rushing yards. We're at a wedding that game, so we're watching on our phone, not during the ceremony. So to,
correct.
To
yeah, we showed listening. A little. We showed a little restraint.
Yeah, it was in between cocktail hours a whole. Yep. So, and Denny threw that interception. That wasn't his fault, by the way. But anyway, he's going to be really good this year. That's one of our losses, and it's just. I don't know. It's in that stretch where we have to go on the road to Florida State, then we come home, play Louisville, and then Clemson's the week after. Unfortunately, I think we lose 2 out of those 3 between Florida State, Louisville, and Clemson. But then I have us undefeated the rest of the year. One thing about Virginia Tech, while that is a tough environment, you know, they fired their coach, so they're brand new. They're starting from scratch. That really should be a game we win. If we can't beat them, then, you know, we have issues. Other than that, I think you're right. I really don't believe the hype with NC State. Here's a fun bet if you want to get into the props. You can currently get NC State under 8.5 wins at plus 135. I made a sizable wager on that. It's always fun to root against NC State. And then, yeah, like you said, it really culminates in the Notre Dame game. And it's a revenge game for Jerko. And, you know, who knows? Like, Brian Kelly, as much as we dump on him, he's a good coach, right? They win ball games. We don't know that yet about Freeman. They have a quarterback that can't really throw. It would have been nice for them to have Jerko this year. But sure they would. Have that guy, that sure mobile quarterback. And then yeah, we close it out with the WQs. We're 10-2, and that gets us to, I don't know, maybe a January 1st bowl. Who knows?
That would be nice. That'd be a really, really nice way for this year to come together. So 11-2, I'm feeling really good about that, Matt. Again, like I said, this is one of the more optimistic, you know, I've felt as a fan in August in a really long time. So overall, 11-2, if not better. I could see us going even better than that, but hope everyone is on board. Appreciate everyone listening. Again, you know, it's going to be a little bit more few and far between. It's our, you know, year 31. We have things to do. We're a little busier. We're going to try to record when we can. This is probably kind of the last dance overall. So we appreciate, you know, everyone sticking with us for one last
ride.
The half dance, as it were. For those of you in New York, we'll all be at Tipsy Nomad on Saturday to watch Rutgers. Matt will be there. It's going to be quite the experience. We've got a couple folks.
I'm going to Dewey's. Town.
Okay. You'll be at Dewey's. That's important. And otherwise, maybe we'll see people at Clemson. We might go to that game. Notre Dame and UConn.
Yes.
Notre Dame, definitely. UConn, maybe. Clemson would be great. It's always good to get back up to the heights. But wherever you're watching, it's a great day to be an Eagle. I hope it's a good – I think it will be a good crowd. The Labor Day crowd's always a little weird, though, right, because people go to the Cape. They just generally aren't going to Brighton for that game. But hopefully it's a good crowd. A Big Ten, you know, a lot of people have a Rutgers connection in the family. You kind of think that's going to draw a good attendance.
It's a big student game. It's always a big student
yes.
game. But, yeah, the upper decks might be a little empty. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously a massive game. So if you're on the fence about going, you got to go. It's a must win. We got to have the home crowd environment.
Right. Well, again, thanks everyone for listening, Matt. I don't know anything you want to wrap it up with. I overall, I think we're both really positive about what's going on this year, and I just can't wait for next Saturday.
This is it, folks. This is it. This is year three of the Halfley era. It's Jerko. It's Zay. It's the last ride. Let's win some ball games. Get in, folks.